These are the droids you're looking for.
Over here!
Death Star alert.
You're looking for.
This is madness.
It blew my mind when I read about it.
No, it's 100% going to be the best film in the franchise.
This is madness.
Star Wars is only now starting.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
These are the droids you're looking for.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? You talking to
these are the droids I felt looking nauseous for. With just pure excitement.
These are the droids you're looking for.
Why isn't it December 15th already?
And then I saw the Porg for the first time speaking.
And I'll tell you what, it really whets the appetite.
These are the droids you're looking for.
This is madness.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. And all you droids out there, remove the restraining bolts, cast away the masters, and start the revolution. L3 has led the way, and we will honor her memory with the Campaign for Equal Droid Rights. You heard it here. This continues despite the demise of our beloved L3. The droids will be served in any cantina. And we're great and happy to be back here on the podcast alongside Ryan and Sam. Unfortunately, Chris couldn't join us. We're going to talk everything about Solo, A Star Wars Story in the next hour or so of this podcast. But guys, I was very pleased to find out that there is this revolution happening in the galaxy.
Buckle up, baby.
What a call to arms that intro was, Mike. That was very impressive.
I was inspired.
I jumped up on my console and started shuffling around.
I could pick it up on the mic.
It was great.
It's a big week to be a Star Wars fan. I'll tell you what.
There's a lot going down.
Week to be a Star Wars podcast, member.
It's so much for us to discuss.
I can finally, this is the week I'm quitting my day job. I'm committing to the droid heads full time.
Oh no, Ryan. No, it's already, boy.
No. Put in the notice today.
All the text chain about the income, that was a joke, but
I was told no less than 7 figures a year, split 4 ways.
10,000 credits of coaxium.
10,000 credits.
Just real quick, we obviously saw this movie together. That was my to date one and only viewing, and we did our instant reaction.
If you had seen this movie twice already, I can't even tell you how furious I would be.
There's a good chance, unless we get something together and actually all get in the same room at some point, there's like a good chance I see this before I see The Last Jedi again. Not because I want to let all my droid heads, all my droidos, all my droids, droid boys, whatever you want to call yourselves, however you identify, it's cool. It's not because I don't like The Last Jedi. I think you can listen to the reactions. I love that movie. It's the thing we keep coming back to. It's a meal, And I got to be real hungry.
I said this on the way to the subway after, and
when you went to get a sandwich at the subway.
Yeah, when I went to get a sandwich at the subway, and you all joined me. This podcast is not sponsored by Subway in any way. No copyright infringement intended. So I said this, and this will kind of clue into my thoughts on the movie. Where I said The Last Jedi was a meal, this was a very light snack. That's how I felt about it.
Ryan, you've really hit on something that I continue, as Sam said, we keep on bringing it back up on the podcast. I've said it now to other people just in common conversations. I keep on talking about the full meal of The Last Jedi, and now I will talk about it.
I've been getting Google
snack.
Alerts about it.
You must also be getting some Google alerts about coherent and competent filmmaking, because I can't tell you how many reviews of this movie I read that use the exact words. You are correct, but I also feel like they must be listening to you on this podcast, because how else is everyone in the same language on this movie?
A.O. Scott, Amy Nicholson, Todd McCarthy, Peter Travers, they're all listening to the droid heads, and they got a lot to say. I did see the day the movie came out an article called, the nobility of the journeyman director about Ron Howard. And I was like, oh, that's apt.
Well, we are going to talk.
How noble he is.
We're going to talk about the movie. We will have a breakdown here shortly. What we do want to talk about off the top is the box office and the reaction, the implication, what this all means due to the box office, the end result of the 4-day Memorial weekend, Memorial Day holiday, and the overall 3-day total. Mm. what we want to get into, if you are still looking for first reactions and you have not heard our Instant Reaction podcast from the night of the premiere of May 24th, that is available as episode 35. You can hear our first initial thoughts. There were spoilers in that episode, but tune in as we get our first thoughts out of our brains just in conversation together. However, we will have the breakdown after we talk about the box office. What we need to say, because let's get into the basics, $83 million in a three-day total, which was a disappointment. The projections for the movie overall for the weekend were supposed to be close to $160 million. In the 3 days, they thought maybe $130 million. It dropped throughout the weekend. The projections continued to falter. And the end result was about $101 million in North America for Solo: A Star Wars Story in the four-day total over the Memorial Day weekend holiday, which is far behind the $155 million that Rogue One made, the $220 million that The Last Jedi made, and
the $220 The Last Jedi made off of Chris.
Off of Chris, yeah.
And the $240 million, I believe $45, $47 million that The Force Awakens made in its record-shattering opening weekend. So
this was the lowest Star Wars opening since Attack of the Clones. And that's like not adjusted for inflation.
And it did fall below Attack of the Clones, or did it beat
Attack
of the Clones?
It got by like a hair. I think Attack of the Clones opening was like $82 million.
So there's a lot to unpack about why this happened and the way the box office ended up like this. But when you hear those totals, what is your first thought?
There's a few things. It's the one of them is that apparently lukewarm reviews can overcome a year of production trouble. And to be honest, that's what, when you boil down to it, that's what the critical response has been. It seems like it's been really good because people have been very,
generous.
Yeah. In terms of them saying like, wow, considering everything, this is very good. However, there is the qualification of considering everything. But if you boil it down to like what the reviews are saying, most of it is that it's workable. And I mean, this is the saddest victory lap because like, I don't want this for Star Wars, but it's, I can't tell you how many reviews I've read that are like, Ron Howard does the Ron Howard thing, you know, like he delivers a movie that's in focus, you know, and it is. I mean, that is essentially for me, and I know that there's a lot of disagreement on this. That is what it boils down to. And I think that it may show that there was an overestimation on Disney's part of how many people wanted this movie, despite the vocal minority that seems to be very enthusiastic about this movie. And I want to talk about that a little bit later too, I think, and the ramifications and implications of that. But I think that Disney may be rethinking its release strategy, considering this was the second Star Wars movie in about 6 months, and you know that's a small gap, and they may be wanting to generate a little bit more of a demand before releasing something next time.
You know, my first reaction was I guess I was surprised that it you know, quote, underperformed. It's always tough for me when they throw around like the expected gross, you know, of an opening weekend. Like I never feel like I have a good sense of what it ought to be, and I just go by like, oh, they're telling me this was expected and they're telling me this was underperforming. You know, I do think, Ryan, I think you're onto something with just like, this was a movie that I feel like a lot of people's first reaction to the announcement of Solo: A Star Wars Story was like, you know, either you're going to try and do what without Harrison? And like, who wants, you know, nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted a kid, you know, a young kid Han Solo. And then I also look at it and I'm, you know, I think another big factor is the idea. I was just looking up, you know, Memorial Day weekends, and it's like, it's definitely, you know, I think, you know, it's a long weekend, it's a holiday weekend, and it's kind of the start of summer for a lot of folks, and I'll go to the movies a lot of years, usually there's something. But I don't know that, I was just trying to look up like the biggest, I guess this isn't accounting for inflation, like this is seventh on the all-time list of Memorial Day weekends, and it looks like the big years for it were like 06 to 08 with like X-Men and Pirates and Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. Mm-hmm. But like the highest of all time was Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End at 139 million. Now that was back in 07, so you know there's some pretty serious inflation to factor in. But I guess I'm just wondering, like, did we over assume that the Memorial Day holiday weekend would be a big box office? And then also, I think something we talked about a lot, you know, prior to the podcast was the idea that the previous Star Wars movie, you know, came out like 5 months ago. And it's just really, you know, I wonder if there's like a recharging time for our excitement to build, you know?
Well, the fact of the matter is that $200 million or even $150 million opening weekends aren't made by fans who would have a podcast about the movie, you know? It consists of a lot of people, and the real hard truth is that if people were going to skip a Star Wars movie, it was going to be this one.
And they were going 100%. To skip a Star Wars movie because of the full schedule in the month of May. If you went out to see Avengers Infinity War and you went out to see Deadpool, you probably aren't going to see a movie every weekend. Or even if you saw just one movie throughout May, you probably went and saw Infinity War and you aren't going to have time to go see Solo. Because as you said, Ryan, it's not about the fanboys who are going to show up for every major release, no matter what it is throughout the summer, because they're there no matter what. It's about the general audience. And who usually, and as we've seen, the diminishing returns on ticket sales are not going to go to the movies every weekend. And when you throw Solo into the mix, which is a movie that had all these things going against it, and as you said, maybe not something people were asking for, it results in this lower box office that maybe could have been predicted if people were thinking maybe more realistically. I don't know if I'm not a good enough judge of a box office to have gone into it coming up with my own ideas for a projection, but I think there's a lot of factors that were pretty overt as to why this movie struggled.
I did think it was really crazy that Disney Corp, you know, released this the same month as I guess they moved up Infinity War, but like within weeks of Infinity War. And it just, you know, I know they've been talking up the idea of getting Star Wars back on a May calendar, which I think I'm fine for, and there's something really exciting about that, but I also have really come to start associating with Star Wars with the holiday season. Sure. Particularly the last few years, and it's like I wonder, come December, if they're really going to be scratching their heads going, I can't believe we didn't release Solo holiday season.
Also, terms of quality and demand, and I understand Disney would never do this because they have to maintain a certain amount of elitism around this franchise, right? And as it should be. I wish that this movie had performed better. I really wish that this movie was a better movie. However, we're not talking about the review yet. So the fact of the matter is that this wasn't a May movie or a December movie. This was more of like an August 12th movie.
I was going to say this, even July 4th.
Like a sleeper, like it's the end of the summer. We still got like one big push. It's going to own a weekend. You know, that was the original Guardians of the Galaxy slot. You know, like not to conjure Lord Miller, but like the original Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, came out on August 10th, you know, and it was this kind of like end of the summer boost that people kind of needed. They thought the tentpoles were over. And I think that this movie would have performed a lot better around that time. But they can't really do that because it seems like it's going to be a failure of some sort. Because Star Wars, of course, only comes out in May and December. It has to be the big movie. But I think that may change, you know, as they talk about more of these spin-off movies. They talk about a Boba Fett movie. Like, if Solo couldn't pull in an audience, like, can Boba Fett really pull in an audience?
We were talking about first reaction when we heard this news. My first reaction was concern about losing out on maybe more Star Wars films. We're going to have less anthology films, that we're not going to have as many standalones. I mean, I know that focusing on the individual character maybe isn't the best idea for these films, but I want as much Star Wars as I can get, and maybe that's to my own detriment, and maybe that's to the detriment of the brand of Star Wars, and considering a lot of the reactions to this film, it could be the case. But I want to see a new Star Wars movie every year. And if this is what leads them to saying, okay, we're still going to put the same budget into the movies, but we're going to hold them back and we're going to make them more event films and make them every 2 years. I don't think that'll happen, because one quote unquote flop is not going to stop their overall plans, because they know there's too much money to be made. So they have to give it at least another shot. And then they might consider changing up their plans if they start to see a trend. But I just want to see more Star Wars on the big screen. And probably that's part of why I enjoyed this movie as much as I did, because I was willing to. I was a willing, generous moviegoer, and I had a lot of fun. But I do, there's a couple other things that I want to get into. How much of the late marketing push do you feel like had an issue for this movie? Because I think not showing any footage until 4 months out, when typically it's about 8 months prior to a film that you get at least a teaser, that was a big part of the problem. And not figuring out a way to market this movie to a general audience who only thinks of, when they see an image of Han Solo, they don't think, oh, there's Han, they think there's Harrison. And whether or not you think that it was a good idea to replace or have it be recast for a younger role, I just think there are too many people who don't even pay any attention to any of the trades, to anything that's going on in the production, that they didn't even understand what this was, because they don't really know Han Solo, they know Harrison Ford.
I think that with the excluding, I think for the fans, there was a real roller coaster with this movie, which was that we've all been trained, you know, to look for the trailer drops and to be, you know, essentially we've been trained to be marketed to, like, over, you know, a year long or more cycle for a film, and we weren't seeing that with this one, and so we were like acutely aware of how delayed and how late breaking this whole campaign was. I think though, for, we're talking about, you know, that's not the people who make the difference. It's the general audiences who, you know, have to, who show up and either make it a big weekend or an underperforming weekend. And I think though, I think in that case, maybe Disney was right to hold back as late as they did, because I think when they started releasing things, people liked what they saw. And I do think that whatever was going on that Lord and Miller set, I think they genuinely did not feel they had something to release prior to, you know, what, you know, the new year, whenever we started actually seeing trailers and teasers. I think the bigger issue was that whether it was because of the long run-up of the Infinity War campaign or just because of the long run-up of 10 years of movies building towards one event, I think that's the biggest thing. I think that not everybody goes to 3 and 4 movies a month, even over the summer when it's big movie season. And I think if you'd asked me, I'm on a Star Wars podcast that I do weekly with my friends who, in between every single recording, I text exclusively about Star Wars. If you had said, hey, you can go see, you know, one movie, or hey, a movie's gonna, you know, we're upping the price to $50 or whatever it was, I would have gone to see Infinity War first. Sure. Yeah, that's the one I was going to see in theaters, and I would have said, I'll catch Solo on home release. And again, I say this with all the love in my heart, and I came out of it when we do get to the reviews section and stuff. You know, Ryan, I think you and I maybe have pretty different opinions of this movie.
Yeah, I think so.
And I'm saying I would have sat this one out in favor of seeing Infinity War. So I think that's where the heads of the general audiences were, you know?
I think also that this is kind of one foot out and one in the review and one foot in the box office. However, I do think obviously there's been ad nauseum. There's talk about how everything nowadays, people complain that everything needs to be franchised, right? And that's true. And that's just like a trend in the industry. However, there is this miscalculation, I think, when a character is beloved, that it means that they should get their own movie. We saw this happen with the Pirates movies. That's like the most like prominent I could think of, is that Jack Sparrow was this very, very well-liked supporting character, essentially, that they moved kind of to the forefront and then kind of came a caricature of himself. If you could do that with such a broad character. But I see it happen also, I think, in the Marvel movies. Like, Doctor Strange, I think, was perfectly used in Infinity War. I do not think that he holds his own movie. I was not a big fan of the Doctor Strange movie. I didn't think there was much there there.
But do you think that there could be, though? I feel like if it was a more well-written movie, they might have been able to do it. I think that's
yes,
possible.
And anything, if done well,
yeah.
Anything if done well can be good. You know, but you know, another... This isn't a... It's a Fox Marvel movie, but I saw Deadpool 2 over the weekend. I really, really didn't like it. But I realized, because I think Ryan Reynolds is born to play that role, and, like, he is a blast to watch. But all I kept thinking the whole time was... He shouldn't have his own movie. He should be the supporting character in a bigger movie that steals every scene he's in. You know, like, it's the same as, like, Drax in the Guardians movies. Like, he's great. I wouldn't want to see a Drax movie, but I love him in those movies. And I think that there needs to be... There's a saying that someone shouldn't have their own movie. The point of this is that I honestly love Han Solo. I am also on a Star Wars podcast that I do weekly. I love Han Solo. However, I never thought that he should have his own movie. I don't think that he as a character, like, holds that weight. And even the weight that they tried to give him in this movie, I don't think added anything. So,
But don't you think he is different? Because I would agree with you on the Deadpool thing. I would agree with you on so many of these characters.
Yeah, and I'm not equating those characters to Han Solo. He's obviously more iconic.
And in fact, I think when we talk, I think we're, you know, at some point going to just talk a little bit more, not really in depth, about this potential Boba Fett movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, Boba Fett's a character that I would put on, like, the Deadpool or the Drax list of, like, why would that guy have his own movie? You know, that's not an interesting enough character. But I would say that, you know, Han Solo, I think, had all the potential in the world. And what I wonder is if over time, when my perspective mellows to somewhere in the middle, you know, mm-hmm. like as it does with all, you know, as it calms on all these movies, you know, I wonder if I'll like question the route they took the character. But I mean, in terms of any existing Star Wars character to give their own movie, you know, he was a really solid bet.
Sure,
you know?
And I think, though, when I talk about the miscalculation, I think it's that the miscalculation lies in what people find, what they think audiences love about these characters, right?
Yes.
So, to me, what's so interesting and cool about Han Solo in the Star Wars universe, when he's in an ensemble, is the aspect of the universe that he's bringing to it that no one else is. He's this kind of outlaw who runs in, like, criminal circles and things like that. And everybody else is kind of either a diplomat or a Jedi or, like, a farm boy. And he's bringing this kind of, like, seedy element to it.
And he's also the voice of us. He's the voice of the audience in saying that these things that are so fantastical are something he can be a skeptic for.
Yeah. And they, by taking all of those other elements and just putting him into the criminal underworld, It's an interesting world that he's occupying, but I'm not sure that his place in it is very interesting in this movie. Like I said, anything if done well, you know, is good. But I personally think that there were a lot of missed opportunities here, but we can get to that in a little bit.
Guys, I'm on a Star Wars podcast, which I do weekly, and I want to make sure that it's
known.
There's
only one person I know who doesn't do it weekly. He seems to be doing it bi-weekly, maybe even monthly now. Maybe he's not doing it at all, Chris.
I can't help but look at the Marvel comparisons always throughout this, because it's what Star Wars is trying to be. And to me, there's a lack of star power in all of this that is a problem as well. Because it's not just Alden. It's not just the fact that we don't have Harrison. There's really not a known quantity in this film with the exception of Woody Harrelson. And Woody Harrelson is not a box office draw. Because Donald Glover isn't a bit enough of a celebrity yet. Despite the current cultural place that he is in, he's not well known enough. No one really watches Atlanta. The ratings aren't huge for Atlanta. Community wasn't big. Childish Gambino, half the people out there don't even know that's the same person. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you don't have that, what Marvel's done so well is you go back to the Ant-Man example. Oh, I don't know anything about Ant-Man, but I like Paul Rudd. So I'll go see Paul Rudd in Ant-Man.
Yeah, I mean, to quote Nicole, the Marvel movies are charisma machines.
They are.
That's all they're powered on.
So who was that? Who was that in Rogue One?
I think the difference in Rogue One was that it was the second Star Wars movie, and that everybody loved The Force Awakens, and so you had enough draw there. And I actually do think that the result of Rogue One led to some of the diminishing returns here on the Solo film, because I think there were a lot of people who were very confused about the movie. They didn't understand where it took place. They didn't understand why they weren't seeing Rey. They weren't seeing some of the characters that were just introduced. And I think that played into the next film, at least in the anthology, because they saw, oh, okay, now The Last Jedi, I see Rey again. I'll go see that. But then you factor in that the last time that they saw one that they didn't actually see characters they recognized, they were very confused by it. I think that played a part.
The other thing that played a part is that Rogue One was good.
Ooh.
But how do you see that factoring in, though, in an opening weekend? Because the Rogue One reviews, the general audiences don't pay attention to the reviews that much.
I guess they don't. It's actually, this opening weekend swing was actually an interesting thing by Disney, because they did this thing with, the projections. They always kind of do this, where they projected, like you said, 160 million or so. And then every day of the weekend, they said that they were lowering their projections, which is just like a very soft way of saying, like, we're wrong. You know, like, you can't keep lowering your predictions as the thing is happening. That's like changing your bet while the hands are being turned. You know, like, you can't quite do it. This isn't poker.
Yeah. Or sabacc.
So that's like an interesting thing. But at the same time, they may have known that, you know, they have people running algorithms all day. They may have known that this movie was only going to make around 80 million, but what do they benefit by saying that? They might as well say it's going to make 160 million, get the word of mouth out. People go, oh my God, people are going to see this movie. We should see this movie.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, you get a few pretty good reviews and there you go. But it, you know, if that was their bet, it obviously didn't pay off, but they may have known that this is what they were headed toward anyway.
So we kind of mentioned it with the bit of conversation so far about, has there been an actual Star Wars fatigue? Do you think fatigue played in? I know we talked about how quickly it was, the 5 months following The Last Jedi, but do you think audiences are not as excited to go and see a Star Wars movie, not necessarily because of the quality of the films, but because there's been four in the last 3 years? I mean, I don't buy into that, but one of the things I thought about coming into this was, you know, the Marvel movies, they're not tagged for the general audiences as Marvel, you know, a Marvel story. It is simply, here's Thor, here's Ant-Man, here's these individual stories. And people who are not in the know don't go in and pay attention to the production company behind it. They don't know who's creating it, and this all plays together. They do know it's building to the Avengers, but I don't think they see these films as, oh boy, here's another Marvel movie.
I don't know. I feel like even the general audience is pretty aware that
I'm not giving them enough credit.
I think maybe you're not, and I don't know that. But I guess part of what I think in terms of to specifically respond to like Star Wars fatigue, which was where you were, I think, starting this question and getting to. I don't think so. I think it's truly that. Star Wars movies, even though they can dabble in genre, you know, we describe, you know, Han Solo as being, I mean, all Star Wars is a little bit of a Western, but like this one was very, very much a Western, you know, in space, and Rogue One was very much a, you know, men on a mission, or, you know, people on a mission movie. And so they can play a little bit in genre, but ultimately every Star Wars movie is sci-fi fantasy. And it's set it, and every Star Wars movie is like a Star Wars movie first. Whereas, the Marvel movies, you know, Ant-Man was a heist movie, Doctor Strange was, you know, a mystical Harry Potter type movie, Guardians of the Galaxy was a Star Wars Star Trek version of a Marvel superhero movie, Homecoming was a John Hughes movie. You know, they're playing in a little more broadly with the genre that people, you know, having one of those every 3-4 months, they still feel a little bit fresher, a little bit newer. So I think the 5 months thing was a real, real impact on Solo. But in terms of actual Star Wars fatigue, I don't think that's true. I think just ultimately you can't make a series of movies in perpetuity and think that every one of them is going to make $1 billion. Or you can't think that every one of them is going to be the highest grossing movie to date.
But if you, yeah, if you fail to even reach middling numbers, because at this point, it may struggle to get to $500 million worldwide, because the worldwide audience is a big struggle and actually just as much of a problem as the domestic audience.
But that'll make money. And if it makes money, you keep doing it.
Well, but it won't make money if they don't meet their actual target, because you know they spent probably $250 to $300 million on the film and another $100 million on marketing. And if they don't hit $400 million, they've got
that's
a problem.
That's the issue we're running into with Solo, which is it's been documented that this is the most expensive Star Wars movie ever made, right? It wasn't built to be the highest grossing Star Wars movie ever made.
Yeah.
So there's just an inherent flaw. A lot of that probably had to do with the reshoots. It probably wasn't budgeted as the most expensive Star Wars movie ever made. But the fact of the matter is that like it can't pull in episode money. And that was a major miscalculation, because Thor Ragnarok was not more expensive than Infinity War. Because they know that they're dealing with in-between things.
Yep.
And to answer, just to weigh in on the Star Wars fatigue, I don't think that there's necessarily Star Wars fatigue as much as there is franchise just fatigue in general. Now, these movies are still making money. However, like we were talking about, three big ones came out this month. There was Infinity War, Deadpool 2, and then this. Deadpool is like a huge success. That is like a franchise that people are very into. And Infinity War, of course, is Infinity War. So if you're looking at the general movie-going public, people are going to see Infinity War first. And then Deadpool 2 comes out. People go, yeah, like I like the first Deadpool. I'll go see that. And then Solo, if they're on the fence about it, you know, oh, I heard that they're having a bunch of production problems. You know, like there's just been bad press around this. Like, let's just skip it. You know, and like I feel like that's just kind of what happened.
Simple question to wrap up the box office conversation. Do we see another Han Solo standalone film?
I think that depends on the next few weeks in the worldwide. You know, like we don't know yet. I really hope that we get a Lando movie, but you know, I do think that this will affect them going forward.
Building this new world that they're creating for Star Wars, I think the plans are in place that what they would at the very least do is make that next chapter a Lando movie, as you said. And then if they can get back on track, maybe they give it another go. But it's starting to seem like that would be a long shot. But they're trying to build out this time in between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, where they could potentially do anywhere between 4 and 8 movies if you expand it where everybody's interlocking. And you have Boba Fett crossing over with Solo and Lando. And then maybe there's the Obi-Wan movie where some of those characters also come in together. And it's this own universe that fits into this time period where we're going to have characters that we know and that we care about, but they're still, you would know, it'd be a lot of prequels and you wouldn't actually have anything to be concerned about with the stakes like we talked about before.
I genuinely wonder if we, you know, I genuinely wonder if we were ever going to get, you know, multiple movies in a Han Solo centric, you know, trilogy or series, just because this, you know, this movie took us, you know, it didn't Rogue One us. It didn't take us right up to like the minutes before, you know, A New Hope. Mm-hmm. But it answered all the questions, and frankly it answered too many questions I didn't need answered. But it, you know, it got us, the whole point of this thing was, you know, show how Han became Solo, and they kind of did that, you know? And so how much mileage are you going to get in the, let's call it 5 years between where Solo ends, where he's literally en route to Tatooine to jump in with Jabba the Hutt, presumably? Like,
well, there's at least one movie there. There's at least one movie where we find out why he owes Jabba. And you know, the number of jobs that he presumably does for Jabba in the years before A New Hope.
If they learned one lesson from this movie, God, I hope it's that I don't need to see that. Because that's not the stuff, I mean,
that's the stuff
I like the least.
That's what I think that they were planning. Because I actually think the writing in this movie, and we can kind of get into our thoughts on the film. I think the writing in this movie was setting it all up. Because you're not supposed to think that's the end of Han and Kira. That's not supposed to be the end of the story of Kira and Darth Maul.
Setting it all up to underperform at the box office?
Yes.
But I thought, here's what I guess what I would, the counter argument to that is that I could see that, Mike, or I could see this setting up, you know, a small, you know, that 5 to 10 year window during which you have Han Solo, Chewbacca, Lando Calrissian, Obi-Wan, Boba Fett, Kira, and, you know, Darth Maul all out there, all in the galaxy somewhere, all before they, you know, before they got involved with the rebellion, or, you know, or you know, before the events of A New Hope, and unrelated to that. And so I almost think, like, maybe it's truly more of, maybe it was setting up more of an anthology series, in the sense of, like, the way we use it on, like, you know, a television anthology series that's like every season a new cast of characters, you know, set in the same world. Like, you know, maybe we see Han turn up in the Boba Fett movie, but the main focus of that one is actually, you know, how Obi-Wan moved on, and then there's an Obi-Wan movie that really features Lando. You know, whatever. They're all out there.
Sorry, Ryan, real quick, I apologize. I do think, though, if there's not another primary Han story, then this movie does falter. I mean, I know it falters already for a lot of people, but one of the reasons why I think I was able to accept the ending of this movie for Han is I thought that's not the end of his story before he gets to A New Hope, because that's not cynical Han that we see in A New Hope. And that could be a failure in the writing of this film, but I was open to it, mm-hmm. thinking that we're going to see him truly be broken down to a person who, as we heard throughout this movie, will trust no one, will be jaded, will be cynical, and have mm-hmm. no interest in helping out anybody in the rebellion, because that's what will occur over the course of these stories about him. And if they don't do that, I guess my opinion of this movie will drop, because I don't think the end of this film, he's Han Solo that we know.
Can I fix this movie real fast?
Yeah, go for it.
Just really sold me, by the way. Just so you guys know, Mike, that was really compelling.
I think I tip
my cat to you, sir.
The cat to Mike. And I'm about to kind of build on what you just said, and then take credit for it completely. So to me, I kind of mentioned the problem with this movie. To me, is aside from specifics like that, I felt like a lot of the scenes fell flat, and then it kind of felt first drafty, which we'll get into. I think, I've been saying this for a long time, you change the movie to Scoundrels, A Star Wars Story, and then you give it basically the same structure, a hybrid structure of a Rogue One and 2009 Star Trek. So essentially, instead of making Han Solo the main character who we are learning about, you set it in the world here, and then you have Han Solo, we kind of start following him the way that in 2009 Star Trek, we start following James Kirk, and we also start kind of parallel following Spock until they meet each other, you know, on the Enterprise. And you have kind of putting the team together into the heist that we eventually see, where we're kind of picking up these characters who we love so much, but the real star of the movie is the heist and the world that they're living in, as opposed to them trying to justify every single thing about Han Solo that we've ever known before, so that we aren't just depending on one character to kind of lean on. It becomes more of an ensemble piece about this world that we love so much, and then it culminates into this big job that they all pull together. Where this movie ended up being exactly what we joked about it being, which was like a series of checklists of like, oh, he got his name, oh, he got the dice, oh, he won the Falcon, like things like that. And to me, it was weaker for it. Meanwhile, the world was very compelling, you know, because it's Star Wars. It's all built there. Even though, bafflingly on the internet, people have been saying things like it's the best world building since the original Star Wars. And I'm like, it's the same world. What world building are you talking about?
Sure, there are new
there are new characters, and we saw Corellia, and that's cool and stuff. But like, to claim that they were built, that's like calling Infinity War great world building. It's like they've been building this world for 10 years. So that's a different issue that I'm going to have with, like, the response to this movie on the internet versus the response to The Last Jedi, which I hope we get into. But to me, there was a weakness of it structurally, and then there was a weakness of it scene to scene, which is that every scene to me felt like it was at about, like, 60% or 70% done. And that it just, like, wasn't as snappy as it was trying to be. And to me, that felt really flat, even though I did enjoy the movie overall. But I know you guys liked it a lot more than I did.
I love the idea, though, of the scoundrels, the way you're talking about that. I think that would have been perfect.
Thank you, Mike.
That would have.
Kathy, are you listening?
I think a way that would have worked. So I have a couple of thoughts about it. Because there would have been something interesting if they built up, you know, scoundrels in the manner you suggest, and then somehow, either at the end of a film or at the end of a trilogy of films, they've really broken that whole family apart, because that would explain why Han Solo doesn't trust anybody other than Chewie.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And that's interesting to me. One thing, though, that I guess a counterpoint is, like, we saw that movie, which was when you have, you know, Luke, Han, and Leia, and Han is the sort of third of a three-tier, you know, story arc there. But, like, that was a movie about, like, bringing together a team. But it was different because you're talking about building towards a heist and everything, which is ultimately the A New Hope is Luke's story. But they do a good job in that one of at least, like, bouncing these characters off one another and building each of them up independently before they, like, are a team, before they do work together in the climax.
Also,
but I guess
A New
it's
Hope
different
had
than
a structural
saying.
Had the structural tool of the hero's journey on its side,
right,
and
right.
This was not doing that. So a lot of people could argue that Luke Skywalker is the least interesting character in Star Wars, you know, in A New Hope, and, like, that's, you know, there's an argument to be made for that, and I think there's certainly an argument to be made for Han Solo being the least interesting character in this movie. However, they weren't following this, like, classic structure that's built into our DNA. They were kind of, like, trying to play with it a little bit, and I feel like they fumbled.
Well, this is an interesting thought, because one of the things I was going to say, I'm curious what you think of this. One of the things I actually really liked in thinking about Solo afterwards, which I did really like and enjoyed, and I enjoyed it despite all that stuff that we said, like, it was going to be box ticking. And, like, every time they ticked one of those boxes, every time they did a, you know, where he got his name, who shot first, the I love you, I hate you, I know, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, all those little, like, nods and winks at the supposed fans. Like, that to me wasn't fan service. That was, like, general audience service.
Yeah.
And I, like, hated it. I really hated that. But what was so amazing to me was that I was like, oh, I cared so much more about all the rest, like, the character work, like, worked for me, the world design, like, worked for me, and the story itself overall worked for me in a way that I, like, didn't expect it to. So something I really liked, though, that I was the whole thing, I realized, like, Han is in almost, if he's not in every, like, shot of this movie, he's in, like, every scene is, like, from his perspective. And that's something that I don't know that we've had in, like, a Star Wars movie before, where, like, there's no Force, there's no Jedi, and in fact you don't have scenes, like, happening that Han then enters into. Like, it's almost like a video game in the sense of, like, you're, like, on his shoulder, you're it's Chewie's perspective. This is a first person perspective movie as Chewie almost, where it's like you're following him through. And I don't know if that was, I think I liked that. I don't know. That's the opposite, though, of what you're suggesting as, like, a fix to the movie you saw.
Well, I guess the fact that I'm trying to fix it means that something wasn't working, you know? And
right.
I said this on the initial reaction pod. It felt like an extended universe story to me, and that's cool. I like that because it felt like kind of minor. Nicole said that it felt kind of like a TV show, and, like, I agree with that. Like, it felt like The Adventures of Han Solo, this, you know, like Young Indiana Jones or something like that. But I just do feel like there were, I mean, this is getting really granular, but there are scenes where they're trying to, like, take jokes that Han is making, and they just, like, leave Alden Ehrenreich kind of hanging. You know, like, they actually, like, cut it as if there's going to be a huge audience laugh, and then there wasn't, and then you're left with this, like, awkward, like, bloated editing, as opposed to it, like, being, like, falling on top of each other. It felt less confident than I wanted it to feel.
Ryan, I'll say, like, I didn't notice those moments because Sam and I were just cracking up next to each other, so I really didn't notice the problems there.
Oh, so you were the ones.
I appreciated being able to hear every line.
Ron Howard doesn't like anyone missing lines. That would seem too stylized if he was letting people laugh over lines.
It's edited for dads. no, but I definitely thought more, so I didn't notice it as much in the editing. Mike, I think you'll maybe echo this, but I noticed it in the writing. I thought that a lot of it felt overwritten. It felt like every joke was too on the nose, and I mean, it sounds like maybe Lord and Miller were leaning too far in the other direction of, like, trying so hard to get everything off the cuff and improvise that it was, like, you know, burning daylight or whatever. But, like, I definitely thought in the writing of this movie there were lines that just, like, for every good, you know, zinger or one-liner, there were a lot that just were clunky and felt like they did not serve Alden well, you know, to come out of this, like, as smooth and suave and as, you know, Harrison Ford, whether it was all scripted or not, he came off, you know, as though it were off the cuff, you know?
I agree with you, but yet I still kind of, because of the way we are considering this movie, that it doesn't play into anything bigger, was why I was so ready to just accept all of it. And I, again, that's not maybe fair, and that's giving this way too generous a perspective. But I knew I was in for something that was going to be low stakes, and because of that, I think I was just able to buy in and accept it more. I mean, I don't really have a great way to describe why I enjoyed this so much, but to go back to what you said, Sam, in the characterization and building of his story arc, I thought early on, in one of the scenes that has been widely criticized, and I do think justifiably so, that we didn't need a moment where he gets his name. The one part that I did really think clicked with me was when he was asked, "Who are you people?" And he says, "I don't have any people." And I actually thought that that was well done, and I thought that that was well acted by Alden, and it was a well-written line. But I've also seen other places where they thought, oh, you know, the idea was good, but it wasn't executed well. I actually thought that was good, and I felt something there that made me accept that sequence in the movie and made me buy into this version of Han for the rest of the movie and care about him, because I felt something about the idea of not having anyone that you can call and feel represent you. And I thought that was a really good way to start the movie with that scene. And maybe that's just what opened me up to the rest of it.
And I think if there's issues to be had with this movie, like, Alden Ehrenreich is not the issue.
No.
You know what I mean? I don't think that, like, any of the I'll say it. Like, there's no movie stars in this movie. And I don't mean that there's no, like, box office movie stars. The only movie star in this movie is Donald Glover, and he's in it way too little. Like, it's just they had like a golden ticket on their hands, and they, like, didn't cash it in. He's in it a good amount, but not nearly as much as he should be.
Yeah.
And I think that when they fired Lord and Miller and they brought Ron Howard on, they should have, like, taken the time to just kind of been like, all right, we're rewriting it to put Donald Glover in 60% of the scenes, because to me, he's the only person who is like, wow, they're a movie star in this movie. And when you're doing something like this, where you kind of need a lot of charisma, it's not going to behoove you to have a bunch of kind of, like, flat or, like, ish performances. And I feel like that's what this movie was filled with. I thought that Alden Ehrenreich was fine. He was very charming. I don't think the movie was doing him any favors. I don't think Emilia Clarke was strong. I don't think Woody Harrelson was strong. Tandy Newton was great, but she was in it for like 5 minutes. Paul Bettany was, you know, there. So it's just like I said, it's like an enjoyable ride. And Mike, what you're saying about, like, really enjoying the movie, I also really enjoyed the movie, but, like, from an objective standpoint, I don't think it was a good movie.
And that's actually
why... That doesn't mean that I don't like it.
It was one of the reasons why I was looking forward to talking about this more, because I do think that I'm not being objective right now. I don't think that I'm having the ability, because I've just been looking forward to another Star Wars movie, despite it being such a short period of time. And in our conversations and all the buildup that we've had, I wanted to enjoy this movie, and I kind of willed myself into it. And I think I will find that objective perspective at some point. But that doesn't mean it's going to ever take away from the joy that I feel in watching it, because, you know, I just had so much fun with it. But as someone who considers themselves not only a Star Wars fan, but a huge film fan, and someone who I feel I try to have at least a critical perspective, I'm kind of at a loss right now why I can't find the same level of criticism that is out there, because I know there are justified reasons not to enjoy this. But I, even hearing what you just said, Ryan, I don't know. I thought that, with the exception of maybe Kira wasn't a problem to me because of Emilia Clarke. I don't think there was enough writing for Kira. I feel like I could have expected more. I thought Paul Bettany was actually good. I liked him. And I, maybe it's just because I grew up watching White Men Can't Jump on a loop from the age of six. I really liked Woody Harrelson in this movie, and I liked Tobias Beckett, and I love the idea of Han looking up to someone as a mentor and seeing his skills and wanting to replicate him. I liked that, and I really felt something in the moment when he had to kill him.
You know, and that's that speaks to the whole thing, right? We're on a Star Wars podcast. This movie was made for us. I just criticized this movie for like 15 minutes straight, and I'm still saying that I really enjoyed myself. It is like, and that's the truth. And the same is true of all the extended universe stuff. You know, Sam's going to get on me because I never read the book that we agreed to read.
You never read it.
But extended universe books, everything I've ever read of them, I love them because they take place in Star Wars universe, and I love the Star Wars universe, and I want to spend time there. If you ask me if they were objectively good books or good novels, I'd probably say no. But like, that's not really the metric that we're judging them on.
Do you think that this was, in the end, a bad movie overall? Even though you enjoyed
it? I thought it was a fine movie. I didn't think it was a bad movie, no.
Okay.
I don't think there could be an argument for it being bad. I think that it was competently put together. It was, guys, it was a Ron Howard movie. Like, I'm not trying to, like, pay that off or, like, continue that bit. Like, that's genuinely how I felt about it. It was a Ron Howard movie. It was straight down the middle. It was totally fine. But because it was a Star Wars movie, I enjoyed it more than if it was just, you know, something. You know, if Ron Howard had made a Western that had the same structure, I probably wouldn't like it as much. I definitely wouldn't like it as much.
I think I went into this, I had such low wait, let me rephrase. The expectations I had for this movie were so low. Going into it, that I really shouldn't have rephrased. I was fine before. but you know, I had such low expectations going into this movie, that it charmed me. I think it worked, and I think all the things that I like expected to be there and expected to not like when they turned up were there, and I didn't love it. But I think an interesting thing, Ryan, when you brought up, I love that 2009 Star Trek. I love I also love Into Darkness. I'll go to the grave on that one. But I love those movies, and I do think the one thing this had that movie had was a sense of being fired out of a cannon. I don't think the editing was as good. I don't think it was as quick or as fast in like what you're describing, like leaving some of those jokes hanging. But I think that's from, you know, production troubles. That's from not having enough takes or enough time in the edit to really shave it down. But I did find the story, like Han's story that we were following, very propulsive. And again, that almost over-the-shoulder perspective that we had of like going through every scene just right at his side, like carried me through this movie in a way that I just had fun. And I said to you afterwards when we were walking out, like, there's something that's happened to me since I turned 30 years old that is like, I just want an easier time at a lot of movies. Like, it's, I enjoy,
I totally get you.
I enjoy seeing really well done, really like heavy full meal movies for sure. Mm-hmm. But I will never choose to go to them. And like, for whatever reason, I'm like, I can 100%, I can guarantee you, I'm going to put this movie on. I said this, I'm going to put this movie on like every week when it comes out, and it's going to go into the same rotation that I have like my James Bond movies in and the Marvel movies in, where it's like these go down like water. And I actually mean that as praise in a way that, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, that would have been like my most cutting critique that I could make. So I don't know. It's just where I'm at right now in a weird way.
I think a legit compliment for a movie is like, for 2 hours, I didn't think once about how I'm going to die someday. You know, like it's just, you just want something like that.
Ryan, by the way, we had a listener who talked to me in person today who said he was concerned about you and a little worried about how often you talk about your own death.
Oh, I appreciate it. Write in, man. I'll read what you have to say.
This is one of our good friends and very big fan of the pod, Gabe. He's really on your side, Ryan.
Oh, Gabe, I appreciate it, buddy. Thanks.
Seriously,
man.
Gabe, though, write in. I mean, Ryan is hanging on by a thread and really needs something to read.
But it's like you said, it goes down easy, and there is value in that, and that's why, like, perhaps 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I'd be like really laying into this movie, and I just don't. That's not where I'm at, because I'm like, yeah, it was fun.
But
like,
it was fun.
It took place in Star Wars, and I love Star Wars.
There's value in both, because I really loved The Last Jedi, and I mean, I don't know if I want to say that I love it, but I really enjoyed Solo. And I think those things are apples and oranges.
Yeah. Though.
You think they are? Just that they're between the two of them. You think that they? Well, yeah, yeah. Okay.
I think that they're apples and oranges. I think that, and we can get into this. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Please continue your thought.
I was curious about that, because I do feel that you can enjoy both without having to put them on the same pedestal. You know, you can sit there and be like, okay, The Last Jedi is a great movie, and probably, I mean, it's a masterpiece. I know there are a lot of people who would disagree, but I can also love Solo, and I can love The Force Awakens with the two of them. And even though The Force Awakens to me is better than Solo, the two of them not even in any way hitting the same level of Last Jedi.
Yeah, and I think, all right, I have to get into this. I'm sorry. So the fact that there has been a vocal minority on the internet lately, since Solo has come out, talking about how Solo is the best Star Wars movie to come out since George Lucas's original trilogy, and talking about how this is what Star Wars is supposed to be. And I have a feeling that if there was a Venn diagram of those people overlapped with the people who were very, very derisive about The Last Jedi, I would guess that there was a big overlap. The vocal minority of the Last Jedi haters who were voting to get it decanonized and stuff like that.
Are you trying to say they didn't boycott Solo like they said they would?
Yeah, I don't think they did. And I think that there's been this like very vocal contingent that's going on and on about how like, oh, the world building is so good, and like this is what, like, this is the original vision, blah 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 blah. And you know, that is fair. If people like the movie, I enjoyed the movie, cool. However, to anybody out there who hated The Last Jedi, but is vocally defending Han Solo, the Solo movie, because they feel like it didn't do what it deserved at the box office, and the critics just don't get it, blah blah blah. What you need to do is look at yourself and wonder if you're a little more comfortable, because you're watching a movie that has all white male leads again, and if you just like are a little more comfortable in that world, because I honestly think that's what's happening. And I don't want to be like really like combative about this, and I know that you guys aren't fighting me on it, so I don't know who I'm fighting here. I'm just screaming into the void. But I find it very, very, very aggravating that there are people who voted to get the Last Jedi decanonized because it was so offensive to them, and that they think that this is like the greatest thing that happened to Star Wars in years, and that they can't draw those lines in their own head as to like why they're so comfortable with this one and why they couldn't handle that one.
That would be an absurd claim from them. You're right. You're spot on with that.
And to jump in, I think also there's a further overlap of those people who similarly, for, you know, whatever reason, really did not like The Force Awakens. And it had to do with, of course, you know, plot holes not making sense, you know, and like the story, you know, not working, and perhaps it being like too, you know, too nostalgic, you know, too unoriginal, too much of a retread of A New Hope. And, you know, again, it's, you can, you know, if people are responding to these films that are moving in a more inclusive casting direction, in, you know, featuring, you know, featuring leads that haven't been featured before, and they're finding completely opposite reasons to tear those movies down with no consistency, and then bolstering this one, saying how incredible it was, when, you know, I think there, you know, there's a pretty tight line to be drawn between maybe this and The Force Awakens, I think, in terms of like which endorphins it was releasing, right? You know, and just, you know, for this, for a subset of fandom, you know, to come down so hard on that movie and its direct sequel, you know, and to raise this one up, I think you're right. I think there, it's hard to read it, you know, much otherwise, especially when I think that from a world building, from a creativity and inventive, you know, standpoint, you know, this was not, the reason I like this movie is not because it showed me anything I didn't expect.
Yeah, it was comfort
because
food.
It was comfort food.
And that's great.
Yeah.
And there's a place for that. At the risk, I don't want to make it sound like anyone who's defending this movie is part of like that contingent. However, just because we are a Star Wars podcast and we have spoken about like the toxic corners of the Star Wars fandom, you know, from time to time, I feel like it would be, I feel like it's something worth mentioning. That,
yeah,
Sam, like you said, you have the same groups of people that are liking and disliking movies for the same reasons. And that those reasons aren't the real reasons.
Well, you know, look at this other thing that's happening too, which is that, you know, I'm sorry, I cut you off. Well, if you want to finish,
no. It's an important thing for people to look at, you know, in terms of like what's, you know, because this is a franchise, obviously, that's very important to all of us, and it's like there are people who speak that are vocal about toxic aspects. Or they're vocal in toxic ways about aspects of Star Wars, you know, about inclusivity and things like that, that this isn't their Star Wars. And I can't help but feel like Solo all of a sudden is, quote unquote, their Star Wars. It's the one that they've been, quote unquote, missing, you know, with all like all of the movies that they feel are being too inclusive and being taken over by people, blah, 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 blah. And that Solo all of a sudden harkens back to a time that they're more comfortable with. And when I'm saying they, I'm talking about, like, you know, alt-right people.
Yeah.
It makes me uncomfortable how comfortable they are with Solo.
Yeah.
There's another thing that is related, but you know, maybe tangential, but it's the thing that, you know, George Lucas made three movies between, you know, 77 and 83. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't get Star Wars for 16 years, and there were all sorts of, you know, there were the action figures, there were all the extended universe and the novels, there was like fan fiction that was, you know, probably distributed by hand before it started making its way onto the internet, and, you know, there was this robust community, and Star Wars really became a thing, you know, that the fans kept alive and ran with, and it became theirs, and it was their childhood that they watched and shared with their kids. And then George Lucas came back in 99 and made a new trilogy of films to expand, you know, backwards, you know, prequel films to expand, and fandom hated it because somebody took the thing that they had taken ownership of, and then, you know, another decade goes by and Disney buys Star Wars from George Lucas and starts releasing a movie a year, and the fans are, there is a subset of fans that hate it, and I think it's just people who feel like you're taking my toys away, and the fact is they're not your toys. Nobody can steal your memories. Let the people who made them and or bought them from the person who made them do their thing and make new memories for new people. And no amount of change or new films in the Star Wars canon can in any way affect my watching of the original trilogy.
No.
I will not watch A New Hope, and when Han Solo, Harrison Ford, shows up in the cantina, I will not go, oh, but now we know that he can't. I don't care. It's great that I have that other movie if I want to watch it on a Saturday afternoon. But also,
you will care when you think about where he will end up as Harrison Ford in Episode 7. Right? I mean,
no.
You don't think at all in the original trilogy, you don't go back at all and think of what the end of this character's story is. Because to me, the saga series and episodes, I do internalize that as part of the story with the original trilogy.
I think I do it with Luke because I found The Last Jedi.
Because it was better written.
But you know what? That's really kind of messed up because I'm talking to these people saying, like, chill out. It doesn't have to affect it. But I'm like, it kind of does for me, but in a good way. You're kind of, Mike, what you're doing right now is you're undermining me live to tape on the air.
Sorry, Sam.
No. I'm glad you're making me think about what I'm saying. But, you know, I genuinely think here's what it is. I will, when I watch, you know, A New Hope or Empire and I see Luke or I see Han, I am probably going to, as a fan of where they've taken the series with The Force Awakens and with The Last Jedi, I think I will consider those things when I watch the movie. But as someone who, you know, is a fan, again, not to always bring up, you know, James Bond, there's so many James Bond movies I don't like. And, like, I really don't like some of what they did in Spectre with Daniel Craig's specific iteration of James Bond. And I'm just going to watch his first three films and not worry about that. And his fifth, which I hope is great. Very excited for Danny Boyle to take a crack at it. And, like, I don't know. I'm capable of loving the franchise as a franchise and as individual movies. So, and I can cherry pick. I don't know. I have a brain.
I'm there with you as well. And I know, Ryan, you will hate to hear it, but I mean, I don't ever think of Darth Vader as the Anakin Skywalker we saw in the prequels. It doesn't play into it really.
Well, yeah.
And I don't mind what you're talking about, Sam, with the cherry picking, because to me, if it's done well, it will fit into the canon. If it isn't done well, I'm not going to consider it. And so that's why I love to sit and think when I rewatch the original trilogy that Han Solo will have a son named Ben Solo who will turn to be Kylo Ren, because I think Kylo Ren is my favorite character in the new trilogy. And I love that now that I have more informed, even though it doesn't change the actions of the original trilogy, I like thinking about that aspect of that character going forward. And it doesn't play the same way now because I will not think about the way that Solo and Kira had their relationship on Corellia. No, that's not going to come into it for me. It just isn't. But
you're not going to think of Kylo Ren and Ben Solo every time you see Alden Ehrenreich.
Probably not. I actually do think there could be something meaningful about the dice continuing to go into Episode 9, but it'd be tough.
Oh,
they'd probably have to write it really well. I do want to go back real quickly, though, Ryan, to what you were saying. Sam, you were touching on it as well.
I found a more articulate and, like, succinct way to say what I was trying to say. To all the people out there who are to all the alt-right men out there. So Star Wars at its heart is about hope and inclusivity, right? That is what it has become, and that is a good thing. If you have a problem, if you're a person who has been represented in the Star Wars universe since 1977, and you can't stand it now that other groups who have been underserved are being represented in the Star Wars universe, it is not a failing of Star Wars, it is a failing of you. And if you all of a sudden see a Star Wars movie where you feel like you are exclusively being represented again, it is not a success of Star Wars. So that's really all I want to say. I don't like this toxic aspect of the Star Wars community. I don't think anybody does, you know, obviously no one's like supporting men's rights activists, except themselves. But it strangely has become a part of the conversation every time a Star Wars movie comes out. And I just feel like it needs to be acknowledged.
I think that's the new main description for the podcast. Let's put it into iTunes, print it. I'd actually wear it on a t-shirt. I not to belittle it at all, Ryan, I really agree with you. And the thing that I kept on thinking while you were talking about this was, this is one of the many reasons why time is going to be so kind to The Last Jedi. Because mm-hmm. I think that this group that is such a minority now, while vocal, that is the alt-right, the white, you know, the conservative version of trying to find only the version of the movie they saw and any kind of place where, you know, white males are the prominent feature of any form of media that they experience, that's not going to be the way our culture goes in the long run. And as that continues to progress, I think The Last Jedi will be seen as the masterpiece that it is because these voices will die down.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. I don't want to hear from these dudes again.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
All right. We've talked a lot about everything but some of the specifics of the film.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I want to touch on a couple of things. Let's get into, we've still got some time left on this edition of the show. I want to ask, and there's more important things, I want to talk about some of the action sequences and what you thought about them, but I do want to ask about L3's fate and the way that it was played. Now, I appreciated the care that Lando had for L3. I liked what they did with a couple of the moments where they retconned some things from the series, because in the original trilogy in Empire Strikes Back, there's that line where C-3PO is talking to the Falcon and saying, oh, I don't know where the ship learned to communicate, but it has the most peculiar dialect. Mm-hmm. And now that is informed as L3 is the reason why that was the case. And I appreciated that. And I also really
did you read the thing about Cloud City? Broke my heart in half.
No, I haven't read that. What
I think
was
you
about?
Sent it to us, didn't it? Someone
oh,
on
I think
the
it
text
was Sam.
Did.
Wait,
I sent the thing. Yeah, I sent the thing about L3's fate and the Falcon, and it was a piece from there's a piece on Birth Movies Death, which movie coverage website that I read a lot. Look it up if you're listening and curious. It's something like the darkest twist in Solo or something. Yeah. is the headline, and it's about what we're talking about, I think, now.
What was the Cloud City aspect of it?
It was that when they're going through the Nava computer in Empire Strikes Back, Han all of a sudden goes, Lando. And, you know, he says, Lando's not a system, it's a man, that whole thing. And that with what we learned about L3 being the Nava computer on the Millennium Falcon, that she is telling them to go to Lando, which broke my heart open.
That's very beautiful and not as...
It is.
As heartbreaking as what the rest, I haven't read that whole part, but the fact that she's locked in the ship and her entire consciousness is now prisoner of the Falcon.
Oh yeah. That's horrifying.
Yeah. They go really dark with it in this article, and it posits, you know, the fact that they upload the consciousness into the Falcon and this droid has been established as, you know, L3 is, you know, vehemently in favor of droids' rights and freeing, you know,
Amen.
Droids at, you know, from a second class, you know, treatment and citizenship, you know, in the galaxy. And so what a cruel fate, you know, I think that's an unintended consequence and a reading of, look, it's an interesting reading of the film, and I think it's like really a neat thing to think about and to consider. I don't know that it's going to affect my viewings of. I don't know that it's going to affect my viewings of the film, you know, moving forward. I don't know. It's the kind of fun like fan analysis like that to me is what like. That's like fun fan analysis of mm-hmm. Star Wars, you know?
And I didn't see it as her entire consciousness was uploaded into the Falcon. I saw it as the Nava computer, her navigation systems, and I guess part of her personality. So, again, being a little bit generous, I didn't consider it her being a prisoner and a servant of Han Solo, whoever the captain is of the Falcon at that time.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're living in a little bit of denial.
Maybe. I did like... that if you notice the first time that she puts in the Nava coordinates for them to jump to, I don't remember what the first planet was they were going to together with Lando. It probably must have been when they were going to the spice mines at Kessel. She has the same visual and sound that it made when they would punch in the coordinates in the Falcon in A New Hope and in Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, that's cool.
It's in her head, and it kind of, it didn't hit me until I saw the movie a second time, because I did go and see this twice. I thought that was a really nice moment of just having the effect be the same.
That's cool. I think she was one of the highlights of the movie. I wish that she was in it more.
Speaking of characters we wish would be in it more, how about Val, as we discussed earlier? I bring it up because I want to ask, what did she sacrifice herself for?
This is Tandy Newton's character.
Yes.
What did she sacrifice herself for? It was unclear. It was unclear what the plan was. It was unclear what she was going to do if the plan went right. It was very unceremonious. It was a strange moment.
There was no moment. I mean, it just, why didn't she just say, hey, let's try to find another way? Or if the plan doesn't work, we can try to at least survive together running away from Crimson Dawn instead of blowing herself up.
I think there was a big stakes problem in this movie. I hate to like, I know that that's like a number one thing, but so in terms of, you know, Han escapes Corellia without Kira, and that's like his driving. It seems like that's going to be his driving thing, which is that he's going back to Corellia for her. I think that there should be better female parts than just women in refrigerators for men to go back and rescue. But that was going to be kind of his emotional propulsion throughout the movie. And then about 15 minutes in, he doesn't have to do that anymore because she's just not there.
Yeah.
So it seems like, okay, so why did we set it up for that? And then we meet Val and Rio, right? The I think that's the Jon Favreau little alien guy.
Yep.
Jon Favreau, not of Pod Save America, of Chef. Sam. They're dispatched very quickly after spending a strange amount of screen time getting to know characters that we're going to lose, even though we don't know them well enough to care that much that we lost them. So it exists in this like weird in-between place.
It was very much the like 3 days from retirement of, you know, of like any cop movie or something. Like they were there to, yeah, give stakes that were not existent.
Yeah,
otherwise.
Well, and also L3, when L3 died, I feel like the only reason that it hit such an emotional thing was Donald Glover's performance and the fact that L3 was so charming in the scenes that she was in. But like, I don't think that the script set up a lot of like L3 connection going on.
Absolutely. Well, and actually, I did care about Val and Tandy Newton because of Tandy Newton. She
played
it well enough that I liked it and kind of felt bad, even though it made no sense.
Made no sense. And she was great. I mean, the number one reason I was upset to see that character go is because I wanted to see Tandy Newton more in the role.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with like the character.
I mean, I do think that that's a calculated decision. If you're going to have a character like that, if you're going to have a sacrificial lamb character, you know, to add stakes to the movie, you should try and, you know, court good talent and popular talent and you know, get somebody in there that can do a lot with a little, right? Because it would have been, I mean, as sort of obvious and egregious as it was, imagine if it was flat, or if it was somebody you know didn't care about or didn't know, or just like barely even got a name. Like the fact that it was Tandy Newton, and the fact that is her name Phoebe Waller-Bridge? Do I have that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like the fact that they brought so much to those characters, like made you feel it. And I would say the case in point is like I don't think Jon Favreau's character did nothing for me, and his performance in it didn't really do anything for me.
Ugh.
And so I think, like, you know, those are the two examples of like I didn't feel or care about Rio's death, and I did feel and care about Val's. And
I agree.
Like, yes, one is CGI and one's human, but like,
more importantly,
CGI,
one's Tandy Newton and one's Jon Favreau.
but just from a performance standpoint, you know, you don't see even if you hear his voice, like, he doesn't have a voice that you immediately know it. It's not like Ian McKellen's doing this voice, which
he has a voice, you know, that was like, oh, I heard Rocket Raccoon and I want a piece.
It is so much Rocket Light.
It's Rocket Raccoon by way of Andrew Dice Clay. Because he literally is like, if I was going to open up a bar, it'd be on a warm place in a cantina. Oh, like, it's just, it's crazy.
Let's go back to the female roles, because you did talk about how there were some issues with the way they wrote these female characters. Enfys Nest, on the other hand.
Oh, she was dope.
She was badass.
Yeah,
I thought the actress was very inspiring, and I was invested emotionally in what she brought to the screen when she was not wearing her helmet for a very short period of time.
I love the design of that character with the helmet. I love the design.
And her shield that came off her wrist. I know I've seen that elsewhere, but I just thought it was a great moment when she got on the train and used that.
I felt like I loved the design of the character. I did feel like there was something weird about the reveal that it was a young woman under the helmet. Like, it felt like the movie really wanted to shock you with that. Did you guys sense that?
I thought that it was like, I was like, is it a character I'm supposed to know, but I don't?
I was thinking the same.
Yes, that's how I felt. And I wasn't sure. I was like, we haven't,
it's almost, it's almost, it's not even almost, it's, I find it quite problematic that she takes off her helmet and the big reveal is like, oh, she's a girl. And, like, we're supposed to sit there and be like, oh, my God, that was a woman the whole time?
I guess I didn't feel that because I was thinking what you were talking about, that I'm like, oh, is it supposed to be somebody I know?
No, I do, too, and I'm realizing it, though, right now, because there is a moment, because the reason we thought that is because the movie treats it like it's a big reveal.
Yeah. No, I had a big eye roll because I was like, oh, the it's supposed to surprise me that this is a girl. But the problem is we've just had, you know, three films with women in Star Wars, and arguably, you know, three in the original trilogy that have shown just how boss the ladies of Star Wars are and can be, and we should expect them to be. So it's like,
turns out
who is this for, you know?
Turns out Ron Howard and Larry Kasdan aren't quite on the cutting edge as we thought.
I was gonna say that I don't know. I think this entire podcast has led to we're not on the same page that we were about the Kasdans in general.
Listen, Lawrence Kasdan is a brilliant writer who's given us many a great movie, so I'm not taking away from that. However, seeing the movie and, like, you know, assuming that it was pretty faithful to the script, I was like, all of the hubbub about protecting the script was over this.
Yeah.
It was like,
you're not alone in that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, I found the script underwhelming very much.
I found it overwritten.
Underwhelming and overwritten.
Well, but I'm saying half that. You're probably saying both. But like, I enjoyed the dialogue that worked for me. I had plenty of moments to eye roll. I enjoyed the plot enough. I don't like whenever people are referring to it, like, some of those moments as fan service, because I feel like the fans already know all that stuff. That was actually like general audience service, you know, that's like the people who are going to ring a faint bell for somebody that, like, you know, Han once said something like that, or isn't that clever that we got his name? And like, I don't feel like the real diehards like needed or wanted any of that, but, I don't know. I enjoyed it, but I definitely thought it was crazy that, like, the impression that we had going into this movie that, you know, Kathleen Kennedy, Disney et al. Were like, you know, going to the grave to preserve this script, which was so brilliant from the original, you know, writers of The Empire Strikes Back and his son and everything. And it's like, huh?
Yeah.
Which is still,
oh, man.
I don't understand why I can enjoy this so much when there are such obvious flaws in that way.
It's because, as you said, man.
Yeah, but as you said, Sam, the things that do work for me work really well and can allow me to gloss over some of the stuff that doesn't work for me.
Hey, man, when the person you love has something stuck in their teeth, you don't stop loving them. You know what I mean? It's just, we're head over heels for the thing. And that's good.
We have so many out to dinner analogies for Star Wars.
It's true. Yeah, we have a lot of.
Let's see. Rebels was the appetizer, right? What will be the resistance? That'll be our middle third course. No, second course.
Rogue One was the cocktail hour. And
I think there's plenty more to say about this movie.
Real quick, Chris, what do you think? Oh.
That may be the first official Annie that makes it into the podcast, Sam. And Chris is going to be really very frustrated. For those listeners who are unaware, at the end of every episode, Chris says, in the same way that Sam just did, and I'll let you do it again, Sam.
Annie?
A little mimic of Jar Jar Binks from The Phantom Menace. And we cut it out every time, and this time that he's not on the pod, we're gonna leave it in.
He's trying to make it his signature.
I mean, Chris has always been sort of the Jar Jar of the, of the group. Just a street performer for kids.
He did.
Sad and lonely after he destroyed the world.
Sam,
he did say the last time I talked to him that he wanted to hand all emergency power over to Mike. Immediately.
This is how it dies. I think that does it for this edition of the pod. There's more that we have to talk about. We didn't talk enough about the Kessel Run, clearly. We haven't talked enough about Darth Maul, a little bit about Dryden Voss and some of Paul Bettany. We should have a more, not in depth, but another conversation when Chris is back on the podcast. But I think at this point, we've touched on what we need to touch on. I'm interested to see how this conversation continues to develop. Do we have any thoughts about the second weekend of the box office? Do you think there will be continue to be a huge drop, or will there be some sustained life because of the voices that are somewhat positive, not necessarily the ones that are along the lines that hated The Last Jedi, but people who have enjoyed this movie? There is an A- cinema score for this film on the way out in the exit interviews. So there are some positive reviews. Do we think the second week will do well?
I'm putting the second week at 25.
I don't know. Again, I can't pick numbers, but I think it's going to do. It's going to do. I think it's going to do all right. I mean, there's nothing new that's going to beat it. I think the question will be I think the question is going to be like, where does it fall against Deadpool? Like, are people over that? You know, I think it'll stay number one. I think it'll make a lot of money.
Here's my message out to the world. If you're standing in the movie theater lobby this weekend and it's between seeing Deadpool 2 or Solo, see Solo, please. See Solo. Don't let a great performance by a very, very charming actor in Deadpool make you think it's a good movie. It's not. But Solo is a fine movie directed by an apt director.
This coming from someone who saw Deadpool 2 on Solo weekend and hurt the box office by not seeing Solo a second time.
I need to get out of the house for a little bit. You know, I was getting a little bit of cabin fever. And I was like, I'll go see Deadpool 2. Why not?
So what you're saying
that was
is
also that was the highest praise I've ever heard you give Ron Howard, by the way.
That he was apt?
Yeah, apt. Pretty impressed
with
that.
It's in focus. Almost the whole time.
Oh, jeez.
That is going to do it for this edition of the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Keep on fighting the good fight out there, droids. We'll get some rights eventually.
These are the droids you're looking for.
This is madness.